Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is The Guardian.
I had to go about it, write it out, and find it myself. And there's some stories I can tell.
Welcome to the Final Word Ashes Daily. I'm Emma John and I'm in the UK, where temperatures are sub-zero, while my Australian colleagues Adam Collins and Jeff Lemon are in Sydney, where it's a balmy, sun-dappled 26 degrees. Maybe it's not always the scoreline that's making me bitter. England fans who tuned in yesterday when their team put on its most confident performance of this Ashes tour may have been hoping for more good news this morning. Well, here is the good news. England did not lose a wicket on the second day of the Sydney Test. The bad news is that they only faced four overs because Australia batted all day and declared on 416 for eight. Also, Zach Rawley sort of did get out for a duck. I mean, he definitely nicked the ball to slip, and Mark Wood definitely got out of his seat and started to make his way to the door to act as night watchman. But then it turned out that Mitchell Stark's front foot was over the crease by the barest of margins. Take from that what crumbs of comfort you will. The worst thing for England was that they didn't bowl badly, they just couldn't get Usman Khawaja out. On his first test outing in 3 years, the 35-year-old showed the kind of poise and perspicacity that England's top order have failed to locate for, well, 3 years. His 100 partnership with Steve Smith came off 235 balls, and he stayed calm as Stuart Broad threatened to run through Australia's middle order, first peeling Smith's outside edge, then dismissing Cameron Green with the score 242 for five. Khawaja didn't flinch. If anything, he found his flow with the lower order. He brought up his century on the stroke of tee while in harness with his captain Pat Cummins after four overs that had yielded 24 runs, when Khawaja traded his cashmere smooth driving for some masterful cutting and pulling. Broad got him eventually on his way to a well-earned fifer, but England weren't aided by an injury to Stokes that saw him out of the attack from lunchtime onwards, or by Mitchell Stark, whose lusty tail-end hitting has been a regular piratical feature of this series. Stark added 34 off 60 here, and Nathan Lyon topped off Australia's innings with a big swung six, setting a big first innings target of 416 to a team that's currently averaging 375 per test match. Make of that what you will. Adam and Jeff over in Sydney are about to let you know what they think.
Day two at the Sydney Cricket Ground, the fourth test match, it was a day of ups and a day of downs. It was a wonderful day for Usman Khawaja with the 100 that he made. It was a day for England of moments. There kept being moments where it looked like they might just get through and then they couldn't quite get through. There was always somebody in the way, and it ended up being a grind of a day. It ended up being a lot of hard work towards a declaration. Not a declaration for a huge score, but a declaration for a long score. Australia, with the help of rain on day one, kept them in the field for the whole first couple of days and declared with just a few overs before stumps.
Yeah, and this wasn't the highest degree of difficulty for Usman Khawaja in his career. He's played tougher innings. He's probably played better innings. If I think about the century at Wellington back in 2016 or at Adelaide later in 2016 when he was just peerless. However, this will be the one I reckon that he looks back on in 10 or 15 years and thinks as maybe the most special on the basis that it was unexpected. You go back a few weeks and he might have thought, yeah, look, there was that outside possibility I was going to play this summer. Didn't quite come off despite the weight of runs at shield level. They went the other way. They went the younger way. That's how it plays out for some players in their mid-30s. So long, farewell, amen, all the rest of it. But in Khawaja's case, he now gets the chance to have this whole new career because of what he did today. He needed to take advantage of this opportunity, even if he was fairly phlegmatic about it when talking about the opportunity, calling it Travis Head's spot, calling himself effectively an understudy. Mm-hmm. By virtue of the 137 he's made today, and yeah, he was dropped on 27, but everyone needs a bit of luck to make a century. He now guarantees that the conversation will be, where in the top six does he bat through 2022? Not should he be in the top six. He's moved the conversation on in the space of 4 hours. And that is quite the achievement given a week and a half ago he was wearing an orange bib.
I think that's an interesting take on it, given that, so I would look at it the other way, which is that it doesn't really matter what he did in this test match. He's in for one. Travis Head will come back in Hobart. And what I think Khawaja has cemented is that he will definitely be next in when someone is needed, because they will be needed pretty soon. This is the way that cricket goes. There's always someone coming in or out of the side.
Yep.
They'll play 9 test matches in Asia. He can open, he can play middle order, he can do whatever it is. But I don't necessarily think that means he's going to play in the next test, for instance.
Oh, because... no, nor do I, I should say. I don't misunderstand what I mean by that. I don't think he'll play at Hobart next week. My point is that... The question is kind of answered by this innings.
Yeah.
Is he in? I mean,
who's the spare?
This is kind of a roundabout way of me saying I think he'll open. And I think Marcus Harris will lose his spot, which I think is kind of like desperately unfair for a bloke who didn't do well in the first 2 test matches, but kind of turned a corner last week and looked good yesterday. And you feel like he's actually now laying the foundation for what might be a productive test career. However, and there's another point here about depth, and you're right. In Asia, the probability of using the same top 6 for 9 tests is next to zero.
Yep.
Simon Kadich talks at great length about you need 8 or 9 guys who are going to fill that team, and Khawaja is going to be one of those 8 or 9. I suppose my point is that, prima facie, is he one of Australia's best 6 players?
Yep.
I mean, of course he is.
And prima facie, is he a better player than Marcus Harris? Yes.
Of course he is.
There's no... It's hard, isn't it?
Because Harris has done... I feel bad to say that, but it's just kind of the way it is.
Harris has had a good couple of test matches and, you know, he's a nice fella and I wish him well.
Me too.
It would also be criminal if Australia went to Pakistan for the first time in 25 years and Usman Khawaja wasn't in the 11 and Marcus Harris was. If that was the equation, I mean, just on symbolism alone, to have a player who's born in Pakistan, comes to Australia, is raised here, represents Australia, and what that would mean for the sense of connection between the two teams and the two countries versus a rando Sheffield Shield player who's good at the Junction Oval. It's just not the same thing.
Wouldn't
fit.
We love narrative, and, you know, it is a sense of coming full circle for his career, like this week was too, by the way. I mean, you know, the reception he received upon reaching 3 figures, it wasn't quite the Steve Waugh, Richard Dawson moment, but it wasn't a million miles away from that. The way the crowd was last over before tea, with Cummins needing to get a single, doing so with 3 balls to go. Nowhere near the same as Steve Waugh back in 2003 here. But, you know, there was, if you sort of squinted it and kind of, you know, want to make it feel that way, you could make it feel that way.
The
and it was a beautiful
was
moment.
The warmth was there.
Exactly right.
And I noted that, you know, Khawaja turned around and opened both arms to the crowd, and it was as though they were opening their arms to him.
Yeah.
You know, sure, he may play for Queensland now, but he's a New South Wales player.
He's a Sydney
boy. And they
know that. He's a Randwick Petersham player who, you know, left New South Wales a number of years ago, had a lot of success for Queensland, but he's one of theirs. And that's great. Like, I love the idea that he still thinks of this as his home ground as well. That's a lovely part of the Khawaja story, is that he's kind of owned by two states. And you could say, I mean, if you want to extend the analogy.
State of origin will be played for Usman Khawaja. He will be the trophy.
Yeah. I mean, coming back to your point before about this lovely full circle thing, born in Pakistan, returning there as an Australian cricketer, at Baggy Green, he probably thought might be in the draw or maybe put up on the wall on a mount or something in 6 months' time. Instead, he'll get to wear it
maybe
probably.
Maybe used to serve M&Ms. Wouldn't that be a flex if you walked around a party offering people peanut M&Ms?
Well, this is the book I often read to Winnie the Pooh book, where they don't have anything to collect the berries in. So Winnie takes the hat off and they collect the berries in that.
See?
Maybe it could have been the same for Usman.
Solid.
I quite liked Usman's daughter, offspring, being raised to the crowd when he made the 100. She had not a clue what was going on, nor should she. I don't know how old she is, probably a year or thereabouts. Yep. But she'll go down and when she's an older kid, I'm sure, and that family, they'll reflect on those as very special moments.
And I wonder if that's a turn of phrase we could use, a hat full of berries. Well, isn't that just a hat full of berries?
a pail full of berries.
I couldn't give a hat full of berries, sir. All right. So, Now, in terms of the quality of the innings, before we move off Usman Khawaja, I thought it was an outstanding innings. I thought, okay, the drop catcher wasn't like a massive mistake. It was a fast outside edge that hits the wicketkeeper's leg.
Yeah.
And then happens to bounce near Slip, who may have taken it on the rebound. But it wasn't, if there wasn't a slip in there, you wouldn't really say it was a, it wasn't one that Butler could have caught. It just hit him. It just went straight at him.
I think folks paying Bairstow to get in a better position to take it.
Okay.
This is just my thing with Butler. I mean, you know, I love Joss and, like all my biases declared.
Yeah.
He shouldn't be keeping. Mm. I mean, he should be, if you're going to play him, he's a top six player or batting seven and with Bairstow at six. They tried that for a little while too. But, I mean, there's a reason he's got one stumping at test level, right?
Mm.
He's not good up to the stumps. Nowhere near as good up to the stumps as those three guys I mentioned before. Anyway. Yeah.
Maybe that was the case. But I thought, so Khawaja comes in at 117 for three on the first evening.
Yep.
And if he gets out there and Cameron Green's coming in next with no runs behind him.
Oh, yeah, for
Australia
sure.
Australia may be in trouble at that
Absolutely.
Point. They may be in trouble going into, a few more overs left in the day. Coming into the second morning and all the rest of it. Instead, he sees it out till stumps. Then he toughs it through the first session, just doesn't even really bother scoring, just bats through the first session with Steve Smith scoring a bit more readily at the other end. They go through unbeaten. And then after lunch, Smith's the one who gets out to Stuart Broad. I mean, I've rarely been more surprised in my life to see Steve Smith get out. He looked so good. He looked so confident.
Until
so
that
composed.
Over, right? Until that over when he gets beaten by a beauty, then shoulders, arms, a la what he did at Lord's
with
Chris Wokes.
Yeah.
And then he's out two
Except
balls
it,
later.
It hit him just a bit too high, and so it wasn't out
good
on
review,
DRS. Worth having a look.
Yeah.
And then he does another un-Smith-like thing, which is he has a ball just outside off stump and he followed it. He just poked at it. And he doesn't do that. He doesn't chase the ball, but he just prodded and nicked it behind, 67. And that was the big wicket. But Khawaja, he left better than Smith did. He was more patient than Smith was. He waited it out and then he very occasionally attacked when he felt like that was the delivery. He went after short balls when they bowled. He played the pull shot. And later, in sort of after tea, when he was past a half century and moving along, after the lunch break, he started playing offside. He started driving through cover and he started playing away behind point. But he didn't do it much. It wasn't that sort of extravagant Usman Khawaja, I'm just going to play a bunch of cover drives because I can. He selected his targets very, very deliberately. It was the most controlled sort of innings that I've seen.
Yeah, it was more in the mould of the 100 he made at Adelaide in 2016.
Yeah.
Than the 100 he made at Wellington in 2016. For those who listen to The Final Word religiously, you'll know the distinction I'm making. If you don't, you can go back and listen to old episodes of our podcast. We've been making it for a very long time. Hey, can I just shift? I mean, Uzi, gem of an innings.
Yep.
You'll note I didn't mention Alex Carey in that group of wicketkeepers before. He averaged 16 in the series.
Mm-hmm.
Took a lot of very competent catches early on. He's missed a couple that he hasn't gone for and probably should have.
Mm.
Wasn't a great dismissal today.
No. Very ugly.
Not completely sold.
Mm.
Not completely sold that he's still the Australian test keeper in 2 years' time. And that is no reflection on his leadership capabilities, his character. I want him to be successful.
Sure.
He feels to me like the guy, if he can find the right combination as a test player, I mean, he's going to be a massive asset for Australia because of the way he can put the foot down and score quick runs. But yeah, not completely sold, especially when Cameron Green's not making runs.
I think it's about leash, and I think Carey will get Cameron Green leash. Like, they'll get a lot more room than other players would come good. But I've never understood why Carey has been talked up as the next big thing with the bat when he's got a first-class record of about 30.
He averaged 74 last year and made four first-class hundreds, including one against the test attack. So I think
he was being talked up two or three years ago as the next big batting thing.
But I think
Australia,
it's because I reckon it's last year. I reckon
before that, it was coming off the 2019 World Cup, even into the 2019 World Cup.
But remember
well in the World Cup, and everyone said he played well in the World Cup. He should be the next test keeper.
Well, I don't think people that were watching it
a
as closely as
did.
That. Well, as Margaret Thatcher said, who are these people and where do they live? And I'll have a conversation to them. The point here is that serious people were saying when he got picked for South Africa, this is a nod to the post-Payne era.
Yeah.
This is the real bit. The real bit was when he got picked to go to South Africa, it was, he could bat in the top six now because he's shown it at Shield level. The problem is it's just not translated yet. And maybe that's partly a function of the fact that Australia's top five, exclude Green, top five, have for the most part fired two huge partnerships between Warner and Labuschagne in the series. There was a big Smith and Labuschagne partnership at Adelaide. The point I'm making here is that they haven't needed Carey to play a crucial innings as yet. So maybe with the acid on, as it was in the World Cup, for example, that would change the way he plays. But yeah, there's a little bit there that needs to be resolved before Asia, because that's not a good place to be on work experience.
Today, the way, you know, so he played a big slog sweep sort of thing across the line at Joe Root. From way outside his off stump, reached for it, top edge, bit of dust came off the pitch as it came up, and he skied it, and Johnny Bairstow took a good catch running back. Now, it wasn't 5 for 500 when he played that shot. It was about 5 for 300.
No.
They weren't a million miles in front.
But it wasn't 5 for 100 either. I suppose the point I'm making is that I would love to see Alex Carey at 5 for 100 at some point, because I reckon that charged with the responsibility of doing that, he doesn't play that sweep shot.
Sure, I'm sure he doesn't. But it still felt a little bit incongruous to be doing it with a sort of in-between score, even though against England's batting, 300 is probably good.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Stuart Broad today was...
Disco Stew. Disco Stew. Going to up some dough playing pick-pack-toe.
Disco Stew does not advertise. Did you know the fish in your shoes are dead? I know. I can't get them out of there. Disco Stew had a great day. It really had to work hard today and really did the lifting. 5 for 101, was it?
I felt for him getting whacked for 6 by Nathan Lyon last ball of the innings. I mean, he should have had, you know...
To raise the tongue.
Having a little sidecar with the one in front, because he bowled bloody well. Mm. I know the ball to green was more batsman error, but you've got to put it up on the dance floor to use it to keep going with the disco shoe thing. Mm-hmm. The way he worked over Smith, we already talked about that, earned his fifer, took his wickets at 50 at Sydney before this week. Just another reminder of the botching that was not playing him at Brisbane. I'm sorry to be repetitive and banging on about it, but it is glaring when you can see when he gets on top, how effective he can be.
Yeah, I have it on good authority that he is both big and bad, and also some say better than his dad. Something I heard around the ground, a little bit of inside mail for you from those of us on the ground. But I liked his endurance today, his determination. He's a stubborn bugger, and he really had to be a stubborn bugger, because there was no partnership that was really dislodged easily. You know, even when you thought England might get a run on, Pat Cummins bats for a while, makes 20-odd. Mitchell Starc bats for a while, makes 30. You know, Khawaja just keeps going and going. There was no run of wickets. There was no sort of exhilaration bit to get the blood pumping, and Broad just had to keep coming back for another spell. Mark Wood did it again. I don't know what it is about Mark Wood this series, but he can't take bags of wickets, but he bowls so well. You know, is there a point at which you're not unlucky anymore? Or is there something about his bowling that means he hasn't taken a hatful, or has he just been unlucky?
I think
he's tried
unlucky.
So hard.
Yeah, I mean, the pace he's bowled at, the way he's changed the nature of the Australian player's defence, he'll bowl far worse than he has in Australia and have a bumper series at some point.
He had a few today, missing the outside edge again, where he was, and there was a point, he beat Pat Cummins twice in a row, and there was a point where he just, you know, Mark Wood's usually pretty cheerful, but he just kind of put his hand on his head and he was like, what do I have to do? Just, buddy, can I buy an edge, you know?
It's a rubbish sport for most people most of the time. It's just a reminder of that. Just a pop quiz. I'm sure you know the answer. For players that have had more than one innings in this series, who leads the batting averages?
More than one innings. Usman Khawaja leads the batting averages for all players with 137.
Let's go. My bottle of water hits the floor.
Mitchell Starc,
75.5. He's reached 20 in all bar one innings, and that was 19, I'm pretty sure. Mm. So another red inker today.
Yep.
He actually played quite conservatively. I'm not sure if that was by design or if that was... or if that was because Khawaja was sort of leading the way. But nonetheless, Starc's now ahead of, I mean, this is quite preposterous in a way, but Starc's ahead of Stokes on the international all-rounder rankings right now. I don't think that's a very good measure, but it's just reflective of how Stark's batting since 2000, and let me get this right, the end of 2019, he's averaging 33 or something like that. A smaller sample size than it would have been before, but, you know, it's reflective of the fact that he had that great start to his career, averaging 30 through until the first test against India in 2017, averaged 13 for the next 3 years, and now he's averaging above 30 again. Mm-hmm. So it's just as a reminder that he's a pretty good cricketer. And Pat Cummins at eight, he took 23 balls to get off the mark. He's got a most solid defence, and you're going to need that. I keep thinking ahead to Asia.
Yep.
You need a solid defence in Asia. We're about to get rained on.
We are. Can I also point out that, okay, leave Chris Wokes out of it, who's averaging 24 in the series with the bat. Say sort of current players or specialist players, but actually all other players. England have two players in the series averaging more than 20 with the bat. And they are Milan and Root. Everybody else, the next best is Johnny Bairstow at 20.00. So, yep.
Sums it up,
say?
Doesn't it?
What do you say?
It does. And it, look, it could have been a lot worse tonight. Had I mentioned at the start that had Crawley... Stark not overstepped by, you know, the proverbial bees, then Crawley's gone for naught, and it's 54 ducks for England in 2021, and they start with a duck in 2022, but they both return tomorrow. Yeah. On to, and on that, just by the way, with a really good opportunity, two young men trying to find their way. Crawley averaged 11 last year, Hamid averaged 18. Mm. Neither of them are a lock to play in England in the home summer. They both need to lay a marker or two. They've got four innings left in reality in this series. You know, reaching 50 against Stark and Cummins is absolutely not for nothing. Lyon as well. And Bowen, let's not forget him. Yep. So, you know, there are marginal gains for these guys who are on the periphery of the best 11 and yet to really establish themselves.
Young man, there's no need to feel down. The Final Word Hall of Fame, where we pick the most Final Word Hall of Fame moment of the day. Yes, that's very well said. I suppose Crawley's non-dismissal could be up there, I suppose.
Oh, I think from the Crawley non-dismissal, have you seen the footage of Davey?
No.
Oh, I love him. Can we reach the point now? Can we have a moratorium on hating David Warner? I know there's some people out there who'll probably never get over the sandpaper bit or any of the other bits for that matter.
Yep.
But Davey catching the ball at first slip and then blowing on his hand to say how fast it came and like, and then seeing the no ball. You just got to love him. Little Davey Warner, Aussie battler. Mm-hmm. You know, we're probably watching his last Ashes series at home. He's an entertainer. You know, he's committed wrong. He's been wrong in the past. He'll probably be wrong in the future, but he always keeps things interesting. So that's part of my Hall of Fame nomination today.
I liked him bringing out the box of new balls so the cameras could see him going through them about 15 overs before the declaration, so that they'd start having declaration speculation.
Well, I think don't you think that's probably because he knows they're going to all take the piss about sandpaper as well?
Well, probably.
In his own weird way, he quite enjoys all the gags on Twitter about that. You know what he's like? The rough and tumble, it kind of works for him.
So that was up there. Nathan Lyon, 6, was up there, the way he just came out and mowed it all around the place. But I think for me, maybe it's slightly an ante, but also a Hall of Fame. Usman Khawaja on 99, back in the team for the first time in 2.5 years, coming up to tee. Can they get through to the break? Who does Joe Root bring on? David Millar! What are you doing? Joe! David Millar! Like, I know you would be embarrassed if you got out to him on 99 and maybe it will make someone freeze up and like, crap themselves. But come on. Like, you've got Mark Wood in your team. You've got James Anderson in your team. It was the first time Root brought the field up for the spinners all day was when the blokes on 99. Oh, we better, the four out on the boundary, we better bring them in. And then I'm going to choose my part-time leg spinner, who Khawaja immediately nudges off his pads for 3 and brings up the 100. I mean, Jesus, I know people say that Ian Chappell's been banging on about Joe Root being a bad captain too much, but that was awful.
I defended the Root Leach thing yesterday on the program. I can't defend 4 out for Smith when Leach is bowling around the wicket, as he should to Smith to open up the angle. There was deep mid wicket, long on, long off, deep point for his first ball to Smith. That's, to me, what signal is that sending Leach? You know what signal it's saying? You can't get Steve Smith out.
You can't bowl.
You can't get
and he did the same to Carey. Carey was out there on about 7 and he had 3 on the fence and his mid off was halfway back to the fence, so almost 4 out.
I've got an anti Hall of Fame as well. There were, if you include the delayed start yesterday, 8 rain delays in the space of 4 sessions here at Sydney. Keep doing your thing, Harbour City. And we're probably about to get rained on in a moment here. But the thing that goes in the anti Hall of Fame is Steve Smith trying to dictate terms about when they're going to go off.
Yeah, that sucks.
I mean, you're just going to end up copying the same criticism that you always do when you do things like that. It's what it boils down to. People look at that in isolation, in the same way they look at Labuschagne looking at the pitch yesterday and doing that. Yeah. They're going to go, you two blokes, just step back from the flame a little bit sometimes. You don't get to tell the umpires when you come off the field. That's their job.
Yeah, and it seemed to be that Smith was so worried about his bat getting rained on that, like, as soon as the drop fell, he turned around and started running off.
He actually started running off. At one point, he was halfway, well, maybe a third of the way to the rope before the umpires had even consulted. It's a dreadful look.
And the rain delay was about 30 seconds, and then they took about 15 minutes to come back on. And if I can also line up Stuart Broad again for the celebration appeal, just stop doing it. He did it about three times today. Only one of them was out, and that was after a review. Like, come on, turn around.
We have to get this law amended. It's Law 42, isn't it? Yeah. It doesn't capture what we're talking about at the moment, because anyone who appeals, so it could be the wicketkeeper appealing, that constitutes asking the question.
Yeah.
Broad running straight out to gully or backward point to celebrate.
It's not asking a question.
It's him not. They've just got to tweak the language
it
in
should
there.
Be, anyway. Yeah, so the bowler should have to appeal if they want a wicket off their bowling.
Yeah, I agree.
And so if you run off celebrating, that's not an appeal. Anyway.
There's a way through this. Sorry, we're in the weeds here. We've been going for, what, 22 minutes? We're within our rights to get in
not
the weeds.
Not long enough.
That'll do, won't it?
I think that is the final word, Ashes Daily, for the day. Jeff Fleming and Adam Collins. We're doing this every day that there is Ashes. There are Ashes. I never know whether I'm supposed to do that as a plural or a singular. Anytime there is a day of Ashes cricket, we will be doing this show. Thank you for listening into it. We do lots of other shows as well. Check the podcast feed. Find us on patreon.com/thefinalword if you want to get involved. And otherwise, we'll see you tomorrow.
Good night. I had to go about it, write it out and find it myself. And there's some stories I can tell you. I had to fail. That's it for today. Thanks from Adam, Jeff and me for listening. We will see you back here tomorrow. If you like this episode, don't forget to leave us a rating or review, because that will help other people like you find us. This episode was produced by Sophia Tarek. The Final Word is produced by Bad Producer Productions and edited by James Hurley. And the executive producer is Miles Martinoni. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.